We often speak about our neighborhoods and our nations. And so in many ways, what we're going to minister tonight refers to or really speaks into both of those areas. But we do want to put an emphasis tonight on the importance of having a heart for those who don't know the saving grace of Jesus Christ and the role that we can play with giving our money and giving our time towards helping those who don't know Jesus come into a saving relationship with him. And so my aim tonight, before Grant comes up to do the reading, just to let you know what my aim tonight is number one, my aim tonight is to give us a heart for the lost. Last week we said we needed a heart for the poor. Tonight we're saying we need a heart for the lost. So my aim is threefold. Number one, to give us a heart for the lost. Number two, to cry out to God for his saving work. So we get a heart for the lost, and then we get desperate in our prayers. We say, God, let there be light. Open the eyes of the blind. God, bring your salvation. Then finally, that we would be moved to sacrificially sow money in order to enable the gospel to go to those who need it. So that's where we go in tonight. Those three things. To get a heart for the lost, to cry out to God in prayer, and then to be moved sacrificially that we would offer up our resources to help take the gospel to those who need it. So Grant, you've been waiting very patiently. Won't you come up and do the reading for us? The reading is John chapter 1 and then from Luke chapter 16 as well.
All right. John chapter 1, verse 1 to 18. You guys ready? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light, that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light. The true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. John bore witness about him and cried out, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me ranks before me, because he was before me.' For from his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, the only God who is at the Father's side. He has made him known." And then please jump back to me with me to Luke chapter 16 and verse 1 to 13. The parable of the dishonest manager. He also said to the disciples, "There was a rich man who had a manager, and charges were brought to him that this man was wasting his possessions. And he called him and he said to him, 'What is this that I hear about you? Turn in the account of your management, for you can no longer be manager.' And the manager said to himself, 'What shall I do, since my master is taking the management away from me? I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I've decided what to do, so that when I am removed from management, people may receive me into their houses.' So, summoning his master's debtors one by one, he said to the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' He said, and the reply was, 100 measures of oil. He said to him, 'Take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, 'And how much do you owe?' And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, 'Take your bill and write 80. The master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness, for the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it fails, they may receive you into the eternal dwellings. One who is faithful in very little is also faithful in much, and one who is dishonest in very little is also dishonest in much. If then you have not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in that which is another's, who will give you that which is your own? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money.
Is it on? Great. John, if you can just kill all the lights there. I know you've already started, but just kill everything. Go for it. Every light that's on, turn it off. There we go. So the prophetic sense that I had tonight was that we needed to appear people who prayed, "Let there be light." Now, I can sense that there's, I can't see, maybe I can see someone too. But I can sense there's some easy faces here. You're wondering, jeepers, I don't even know who I'm sitting next to tonight, you know? It's like, I should have chosen more carefully. But there's a sense in which tonight I want us to experience a moment of going from darkness into light so that we can have a very vivid and real moment of what it means to move from darkness into light. And so there's a sense tonight that I want us to take in this phrase, "Let there be light." I asked the worship team to prepare that song, and after the sermon, we're going to go back into it, singing it one more time, asking and praying to God for there to be light. And so we want to start off tonight just by looking at John chapter 1. And the Bible is an incredible book of literal genius. Now, I know not all of us come from the social sciences where we appreciate good literature. I know some of you, like myself, are accountants or engineers, and we enjoy numbers. And so maybe the last time we studied a good book was somewhere in high school way back then. And you know, we had this kind of wonder, are these English teachers just making this all up? You know, we did the Great Gatsby for my trick. Can you see me? There's a light here. I don't know if you can. It doesn't really matter if you can. It's quite weird preaching to a dark crowd. I don't know if you're sleeping or... I'm just preaching in faith. I can't see if anyone's smiling or anything. Well, you know, the Great Gatsby was my matric set book, and I remember somebody saying to me, "The Great Gatsby was either one of the greatest novels ever written, or one of the most misunderstood novels ever written, because there was all this incredible imagery about the American dream, and about how the whole story revolved around the American dream, and all these images were dropped throughout the story." And Scott Fitzgerald, the author, the book was a literal genius, and in many ways, the Bible too is an example of literal genius. That the scriptures that we have were put together by both man and God. And when we study them, we come to realize that we cannot even begin to plummet the depth of what is there. And John chapter 1, this passage that Grant read, verses 1 to 18, is an example. I mean, the entire Bible is an example of that. But I know we like to use hyperlinks, right? We like to, when we like Wikipedia, there's always a hyperlink here. The Bible is full of hyperlinks. There are hyperlinks, and this passage is full of hyperlinks. And one of the main hyperlinks from this passage is the references back to Genesis chapter 1. And we'll get there just now. And so we want to ask ourselves this question as we ourselves tonight transition from darkness to light. What was John meaning when he spoke about Jesus in this way, when he referred to Jesus as the true light that has come into the world? What is John talking about when he talks about darkness and light? Well, clearly, as I've already referred to, John has given us some hyperlinks back to Genesis chapter 1. And so anybody who is familiar with the Old Testament story, the moment they read John chapter 1, what are the first three words that Grant read there? Anybody paying attention? It was in the beginning. And what are the first three words of our Bible? In the beginning. So the moment anybody who is familiar with their Bibles, they don't have to have any idea of what darkness and light means, but before they even begin to read about darkness and light, they've already read in the beginning, and any person who is familiar with the Old Testament will immediately know that is a hyperlink, boom, a hyperlink way back to Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. And as John continues in this passage, he's doing a number of things, by the way. This passage that Grant read, chapter 1, verses 1 to 18, John is laying out all of his major themes in these 18 verses. And his main themes, light, life, the fact that some people believe Jesus, the fact that some people reject Jesus, okay, the Word becoming flesh, all of these themes that John will then explore are there in verses 1 to 18. It's the most incredible introduction. So there's hyperlinks back to Genesis chapter 1, and there's also like pointers and arrows going forward to what will come. But what John is doing here is he's giving you an introduction to what's going to come, and at the same time, he's wanting you to see something. So the first thing that John is doing, very obviously, that he's helping his readers, that he's wanting them to see, is he's talking about, he's referring back to the creation story in Genesis chapter 1. Not only is it in the beginning, but it's the references to darkness and light that show us this. Let me read to you. I've got a light here. I was prepared so I can read. Let me read to you the first three verses of the Bible. Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 to 3. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void. And here it is. And darkness was over the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And so clearly, this reference to light and darkness, this reference to in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, is causing us to see that what God is doing through Jesus Christ in this hour for John and his readers, in their hour, God is doing something akin, something alike what he was doing back in Genesis. What God is doing through Christ is he is bringing a new order, a new creation. And New Testament authors will pick up on this, as I said, there's hyperlinks back and there's hyperlinks forward. And other New Testament writers will pick up on the same theme of the new creation. And this is the theme of restoration. This is the theme of redemption. I love seeing things that were old and are now restored. Don't you love walking into someone's house and you see a piece of furniture that was just thrown away on a rubbish dump? And now with a bit of hard work, sanding, and if it's, I mean, we know the style now, everything's painted white with the top is white and the legs are wood. And the old piece, I don't know, sorry. Maybe that's, is that what your house is like, James? It's what my house is like. And so, that's because, you know, our style, James, I mean, it's exactly us, you know? Yeah. Nothing to do with Tess and Lauren. So one of the things I love seeing is old things that are restored or old homes that are bought and renewed and restored. And there's this beauty of restoration. And this is what John is saying. He's saying the creation is marred and broken and fallen and deprived and depraved. And in Christ, God is bringing a restoration, a new creation. And so that's already, we see that. And so by John talking about light and darkness, he's referring us back to that and making us see that God is doing something new in this day. But more than that, and this is where the Bible is incredible, more than that, in verse 5 in particular, John is talking about the light, and he's not only pointing you backwards, but light is going to be a major theme in John's gospel. And he's introducing it to you now. So if you knew the rest of John's gospel, if you were reading John's gospel for the second or third time and you read this introduction, the moment you read light, you will know everything that he talks about in the coming verses. And so you'll know that when John writes about light here, he's not only talking about the creation, but he's also talking about what he will talk about in the coming chapters and verses about light. And as you read the rest of John, you will discover that for John, this reference to light is not only a reference to God's new creation, but it's also a reference, light and darkness take on moral connotations, where darkness takes on the connotation of positive evil, and light takes on the message of being saved from this evil. And so as you continue to read this Gospel of John, you will realize that for John, light and darkness take on very moral and very real examples of evil and being saved from this evil, being taken out of this evil. And so I don't know what you associate darkness with. I don't know if this is a little bit awkward for you tonight. We don't really have a dark night. It would be great if we did this on like a dark winter's night, eh? If it was, it's actually light out there. It's incredible, 7 o'clock. But just picture a dark winter's night, rain, gloom, everything dark out there. This would be a lot darker. I don't know what you associate darkness with, but I think it would be fair to say that for the majority of us, we associate darkness with a sense of discomfort and often with a sense of danger. Now, Lauren and I moved into a new house a few years back, and we didn't really know what we were doing. We made a mistake. We left the gate a little bit open. Some guys crept in, and we came home to our boxes all had been unpacked for us. And for a good few months, I put up some big lights around our house. And for a good few months, those things were on 24/7. They were on the whole time. I remember Lauren's parents visiting us and thinking to themselves, wow, this is like weird. Like it looked like, you know, I don't know, picture something that's really lit up. That was our house, okay? Because there's a sense of safety that we connotated with light. A sense of safety, and that we've chilled out a little bit now. I've put those sensor ones in, right? So if you walk, then the light comes on. Okay, I put those just because, you know, we need to be a little bit more economic friendly, you know. And we've replaced them with energy-saving globes. So, but I don't know what you associate. When I drive down the street at night and the street lights aren't working, there's a sense of, I'm looking in my rearview mirror a little bit more, I'm worried, a little bit more concerned. There's a sense, we even have that phrase, when something goes wrong and when someone does something evil in the day, we even have that phrase in broad daylight because it makes it even worse. Because there's a sense in which we expect things to take place in the dark. And so when we come into the light, when the lights get turned on, if we can turn the lights on, that'll be great. You can just turn all of them on. Just every switch, flick them on. There's a sense when the lights come on, there's a sense in which we feel safe. Now, ladies, if you want to check your handbags, you're welcome to do that. I don't know. I didn't see anybody running for the door there. So if there's anything missing, the person is in here. We can find it for you. But I think for most of us, there's a sense in which darkness carries the connotation of danger. And Jesus says this in John chapter 8. He says, John chapter 8, verse 12, and this is what I was referring to when John speaks about the light. Jesus says, again, Jesus spoke to them saying, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. And so I think for John, darkness refers to positive evil. And light, Jesus is the light that brings salvation from this evil. That Jesus is a light who comes to us. We are in the darkness. And Jesus comes as a light. And we can see him and we can turn from the darkness around us and walk towards him and be saved from the darkness, from the danger, from the evil around us. Listen to it again. Again, Jesus spoke to them saying, I am the light of the world. Picture the world in absolute darkness, as we had a picture of it tonight. And picture Jesus walking into the world as the light. Into absolute darkness, Jesus walks as the light. And Jesus says, I am the light of the world. And then he says this, whoever, the invitation is to anyone, whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Life. And so Jesus says, I am the light that can save you from the evil of darkness around you. And Jesus makes the same claim in John chapter 9, verse 5. We can be saved from the darkness around us by seeing the light of Christ. And by turning away from the darkness, by repenting, and by becoming a disciple of Jesus. And that's what John says in John chapter 1. To those who believed, they became children of God. And so believing in Jesus would mean that you repent from your dark ways and you follow Jesus, you follow him, and you become a child of God, and you are saved. You're saved. You're saved from the evil around you. Once again, if you can just picture yourself in a dark moment of danger. Picture yourself in a dark moment of danger. And picture yourself being saved from that experience. And that's the picture that Jesus is wanting us to see. He is the light that comes into the darkness when we are surrounded by evil and hopelessness. Jesus, the light, comes, and those who run to Him and those who flee to Him can be saved from the evil around them and saved from the evil within themselves. By believing in Jesus and by following His light, we eventually become lights ourselves. And Philippians chapter 2, verse 15 speaks about the fact that we become lights who shine in the darkness around us. And so we then become lights. Tragically, John does admit in John chapter 3, verse 20 to 21, tragically, John does admit that some people will choose to remain in the darkness. Let me read that to you. John chapter 3, verse 20 to 21. For everyone who does wicked things hates the light and does not come to the light, lest his work should be exposed. And I think within all of us, there is a sense in which we know that light can sometimes expose the darkness in our hearts. Even though we're walking with Jesus, there can be a sense in which we want to keep living some areas of our lives in the darkness. But this is true, John says, of those who don't want to be saved from their evil and from the evil around them, because they know that the darkness enables them to continue with their dark and evil acts. But verse 21, he says this, but whoever does what is true comes to the light so that it may be clearly seen that his works are being carried out in God. And so we see that tragically, not everybody will come to the light. But we need to have a heart of faith to see that many will. And a theme in the book of John is this play between those who see Jesus as the Messiah and those who don't. Read the Gospel of John and you'll see it over and over again. Over and over again, you'll see the people who recognize Jesus as the Messiah and you'll see those who don't. And we see it in our streets, we see it in our lecture halls. But friends, we need to not only be discouraged by those who refuse to see Jesus as the light, we need to be encouraged to believe that there are many out there who want to see the light, who want the true light, as John says in chapter 1. The true light. The true God. And we need to believe that there are many who will believe in Him and become called children of God. And there might be some who for a number of years choose to remain in darkness, but one day decide to get up and follow the light and to leave the darkness behind and to be transferred from the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of light. And friends, we're being called to be a people who see many people come into the light, many people who see Jesus, and we're called to be a community who believes that God wants to use us to see many come into the light. Isaiah says this, chapter 42, referring to Jesus. I will give you, Jesus, as a covenant of the people, a light to the nations. Or a light to the Gentiles, to open the eyes of the blind and to bring out the prisoners from the dungeon, from the prisons, those who sit in darkness. And once again, we see there this image that Jesus was given as the light to open the eyes of the blind, those who are metaphorically in darkness, in evil, that they might flee the darkness and be saved. Be saved is the call of Jesus. Come and be saved. Be saved from the darkness and come into the light, Jesus says. And we carry that message. And Isaiah 49 then goes on to say this. He says, I will make you as a light to the nations, that my salvation, listen to this, may reach the end of the earth. And our job, as Jesus commissioned us, as He ascended to the right hand of the Father, and He commissioned us, His people, our job is to take His gospel message to the ends of the earth and to make disciples of all nations. That's our job. That's what we're doing. That's why we exist. You and I, we're helping each other become disciples of Jesus. And everybody is on a journey of becoming a disciple of Jesus. And there are many who need to get on that journey. Many who need to be saved. Many who need to turn from the darkness and begin to follow the light that is Jesus. And we are here to call them. And to believe, guys, to believe that these empty chairs, that we'll be putting more chairs out here because some will see the light and follow Him and be saved and be transferred. And we want to give our money to this. That's where I'm going with this. We want to give our money to this. So let's look at Luke chapter 16, verses 1 to 3. Sorry, verses 1 to 13. Before looking at the passage, let's just agree with this premise. Okay, these are two sermons that I can't give tonight. We have to agree on these things. First of all, we agree that our call is to make disciples. I've already mentioned that. We are called to make disciples. This includes calling people into an initial saving relationship with Jesus and helping people become mature in Christ. Next year, we're going to take on a huge theme of becoming mature in Christ. I'm incredibly excited for that. We are called to help people come into a saving relationship with Jesus and then called to help them grow in their maturity with Christ. We're called, all of us are called to make disciples. That's premise number one. Premise number two, and I'm hoping that most of us agree with this, is that local churches starting, planting, and supporting and making local churches full of life is the primary way through which we make disciples. Those are two premises, two different sermons that I cannot give you tonight, which we have to agree on before I go into this passage. That we are called to make disciples, and number two, that the best way to make disciples is through planting and upholding and supporting and building strong local churches. This is a theme that almost everybody agrees on today. It doesn't matter what kind of tradition of church they come from. As you look around the world and you listen to leaders from many different traditions of churches, almost everyone is agreed on this, that we need to get onto local church again. And so if you're going to fight me on that one, I would just say go and listen to other leaders because it's everywhere. Almost everybody is saying that the primary way to make disciples is to plant and to build local churches. Okay? Local communities where we learn about God together, where we receive teaching together, where we inspire each other, where we stand with each other, where we help the poor among us. Going back to last week's sermon. Okay, so with those two premises firmly in our hearts, what does this passage mean to us tonight? Okay, it's one of those passages where we read and we're like, huh? Jesus, what are you saying? You're commending a guy that was dishonest? And so what exactly is Jesus commending? Just to remind us of the gist of what was read there. There's a manager and he's about to lose his job. And he takes the opportunity while he's still in his job to find some creditors and give them discounts. You wish you had a creditor like that, eh? Give you a discount so that when he loses his job, he's got you as a friend to help him, even though he doesn't have a job. And Jesus says that he gets commended by the manager as being very shrewd. And then Jesus goes on to say the men of this world are more shrewd than sometimes the sons of God because they use their finances to make friends, to help themselves. And then Jesus talks about how we should use our finances so that we can reach others, I believe, to see them saved, so that we might be welcomed in by them into eternal dwellings. Then he goes on to talk about being faithful with what we've been received. And ultimately that we can't serve both God and money. So what exactly is Jesus saying in this passage? Well, Jesus is commending the act of shrewdness, okay? He's not commending dishonesty, but he is commending the act of shrewdness. Now, what does it mean to be shrewd? To be shrewd means the quality, I like this, the quality of having or showing good powers of judgment. Good powers of judgment, i.e. knowing what to do with your money in this context, or knowing what to do with your power, or the money that you oversee, knowing what to do with it, being shrewd with it. Now, in some ways, you could argue that the manager wasn't actually dishonest because he still had his job. He was doing what he was still allowed to do. And so, in a sense, you could say, well, that's why the manager commends him, because he wasn't necessarily acting outside of the lines of authority just yet. He still had his job. But that's besides the point, because really I think what Jesus is commending is the sense of shrewdness. And so I want to ask us all tonight as we continue to speak about money, money matters, what are you doing with your money? Are you acting shrewdly with it? And this passage in Luke chapter 16, Jesus is saying that we can use our money, listen to this, we can use our money to see people saved. He says this, he says, and I tell you, make friends for yourselves, verse 9, Luke chapter 16, verse 9, and I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth. If I had 50 rand here, I could hold it up and I could say, this money could be unrighteous. In some ways, maybe people use it for evil. Maybe some people use it for good. There's a sense in which it could be unrighteous. But Jesus says, if you have wealth, if you have something and it could be called unrighteous, he says, I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of the unrighteous wealth, by means of this mammon, make friends. Here's the next part. So that when it fails, because money will fail you, but you've used it, you've been shrewd with it, so that when it fails, they may receive you into eternal dwellings. Make friends so that they. There's a sense in which, yeah, that you could argue that Jesus is saying, use your money to make friends, to help them come to a saving grace of Jesus Christ, that one day they might welcome you into heaven. So it's almost like this, that one day, when you leave behind the wealth that fails you, your cars, your inheritances, your house, it fails you. It doesn't keep you alive. You've paid 10,000 doctor bills and they've done every kind of transplant they can on you. And finally, your money fails you and you die. And you go to heaven, the new heavens, the new earth. My daughter corrected me this week. I said, Rachel, we're going to heaven. She said, no, Dad, we're going to the new earth. I was like, come on. Yes, we're going to the new earth. So when you die and go to the new earth, the new heavens and the new earth, a very physical place, there's a picture here that Jesus says, and there'll be those who you used your wealth to befriend and to influence and to help to come to know Jesus, welcoming you home, cheering you on. They'll be receiving you into eternal dwellings. They'll be shouting, saying thank you to you for using the money in the way that you did that enabled them to come to know Jesus. And so the money that you leave behind fails you, but the money you invested into those goes with you. And then that's what Jesus is saying over and over again. He's saying, lay up treasures in heaven and not on earth. We can't take any money with us, but those that we lead to the Lord, we will take with us forever. Therefore, Jesus says, use your money to make friends, to influence others, to help them come to know Jesus. Be shrewd, guys. Be wise. Use your money well. Invest your money. I was hanging out with another dad in Rachel's class this week. And you know, when you have one of those moments, you're gulp. He was telling me about his investments in Bitcoin. He, 8 years ago, put 10,000 Rand into Bitcoin, which is now worth 8 million Rand. So 7 years ago. 7 years ago, invested into Bitcoin, 10,000 Rand, and is now worth 8 million Rand. I'm thinking to myself, 8 million Rand. That would sort out my bond and my kids' education. I could have another child as well. And I could send them to UCT. I'd be rich. I could send them to UCT. But now I'm saving. I'm thinking, how am I going to send them to you? Anyway, so I'm thinking, 8 million And you know, when you hear a story like that, you're thinking to yourself, what's the next big thing? Like, surely, okay, that was 8 years, so what do I need to do now? You know, what's the next Bitcoin? Because obviously Bitcoin's had its, you know? I don't know. But you know what, guys? As I've been reflecting on this and thinking about Money Matters and the series we've been looking into, I've been thinking, I'm all for good investments, all right? Because if you get 8 million bucks, you know what you can do with that for God. So I'm all for it. Great, fantastic. But investments aside, guys, let's consider the money we put into the kingdom and the eternal reward we get on that. The money we put into seeing people saved and the eternal reward that we have when we arrive in heaven and we have someone who says to us, I'm here because of the investment you made. Guys, that can't even compare to 8 million Rand. It can't even compare to 8 million Rand. It's not even $1 million. Joking. It can't even compare to any amount of money. If we could see the opportunity, and Bitcoin was back then, he was taking a gamble, right? I mean, no one even knew what Bitcoin was back then. Well, he probably was happy to lose that money. It was a bit of a, he didn't really know what was going to happen. The difference is we know. If we invest our money into the kingdom, there is a reward. So are you being shrewd, guys? I'm not saying don't go find Bitcoin, go for it. Find the next investment. But are you being shrewd to invest into eternal rewards and to eternal life as well? If we can have that final slide up there. Oh, you know, maybe John, just hold on it just for a moment. So here at Church on Main, we've gone through various categories of giving. Tithes and offerings, almsgiving, and tonight we're looking at apostolic giving. We have an account called apostolic giving, and we use the money that comes into this account to give towards churches, helping churches, and to go towards helping those who build churches. And so just very quickly, just the last passage before I get that slide, there goes the lamp, second time it's fallen tonight. Get it out the way. Philippians chapter 4. Philippians chapter 4, verse 14. Paul writing to the church in Philippi, "Yet it was kind of you to share my trouble, and you Philippians know yourselves, you Philippians yourselves know that in the beginning of the gospel, when I left Macedonia, no church entered into partnership with me in giving and receiving, except only you." And so I'll stop there. But Paul is here talking to this church about how they entered into a partnership with him. They supplied Paul with his basic needs, and Paul went around preaching the gospel, seeing people saved. That money led to people being saved. Do you think that one day those Philippians who supported Paul, who enabled Paul to preach the gospel, do you not think that when they arrive in the new earth, thank you, Rachel, the new heaven and the new earth, do you not think that those people that Paul helped come to know Jesus will not be there welcoming them in, thanking them, supporting, cheering them? I think there's a sense in which they will. I think there's a sense in which we do this as a team. We see the lost saved through various ways. We do it as a team, various gifts. The songs we sing, the conversations we have. And yes, tonight it is about money because we're in a finance series, and the money we give towards helping those who build the church. And so we at Church of Man, we have an account, apostolic account, and we use money from that account to support churches and to support men and women who are doing the work of building and uplifting churches. So to finish off then, John, I'm not sure if you were able to import that from Excel into Mac. Thank you so much. So what we've then covered in these last few weeks before we go back into that song of worship, very quickly, we've looked at the local church, our call to support the local church, tithes and offerings, tithes to help pay the salaries of those who work in the local church, and offerings to help pay for things. Excitingly this week, we signed off on a new sound desk. Our current sound desk has died, and the one we're using is a younger brother that has like half the amount of channels we need. Marcus has very kindly been allowing us to use one of his devices. I don't even know what I'm talking about anymore. It's about sound. It's like I'm totally ignorant, even more ignorant than Scott Fitzgerald and the Great Gatsby here. But Marcus has very kindly been allowing us to use a device to enable his incredible band because we actually don't have the technology to have all those people up there. And we've received an amazing quote and we've been able to sign. So we use offerings for that. Then last week we spoke about our responsibility to the poor. We have an alms account. Money that goes into that helps people in the community. But we don't only want to reach the community, we want to reach the nations and the city. And so we partner with NPOs like Home From Home. And on our website are listed various NPOs. Then tonight we've been looking at apostolic giving, helping other churches and helping support build other churches. We also have a church plant account which will money will be tracked towards new churches. So there is a summary then, everything we've looked at over the last 4 weeks. Supporting the local church with your tithes and offerings, supporting the poor through personal gifts, through the alms account, and through partnering with other NPOs who have learned how to do this work. And then in the apostolic area, partnering with other churches and partnering with other gifts. I really had a sense tonight that we needed to have a picture of what it meant to go from darkness into light and to cry out to God, let there be light. And so as we finish off with this song, won't you join us in faith as we sing and ask God that there would be light. And as we sing, that we would ask God that many would turn to the light and leave the darkness.